Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. We have a great show for you tonight on this February the 5th on the West Coast, or if you're in the Eastern or Central time zone, then you know it's already the morning of February the 6th. So good morning, or good evening, or good afternoon if you're in, I should say good morning if you're in Europe. We know we have people listening all over the world tonight because of tonight's guest. Before I bring him on, a couple of public service announcements, and that's what we call the things that really don't pertain to this show. I was this evening a guest for the last hour, the second hour of the Rick Adams Show on republicbroadcastingnetwork.org, and I was a guest along with Dr. Qasem Khalil, who has been on this show a number of times and will be with us again next week. Dr. Khalil and I are co-writing some books, or as they say in the business, co-authoring, and we're combining our research and some very important areas to show the reality of what we're facing in this world today. And we got a chance to share some of our research with the listening audience at RBN. You may want to sometime go in and listen to the Rick Adams archive. Also, I will again appear on RBN this Saturday afternoon. Central time is 12 o'clock. That's 1 Eastern or 10 a.m. Pacific time for a two-hour show on Voices from the Heartland with host Greg Evenson. Greg Evenson has also been on Evident Footprints, and we're going to be talking about what appears to be another looming false flag event. That's if it hasn't happened by the time we get to the show. We're using our discernment and sort of following a pattern of recognized intelligence information that's coming from a variety of sources that there may be a false flag event somewhere around, centered around a comment that is to be made by our president, possibly as early as tomorrow. And this may be something related to banks being closed, a banking holiday. So this information is rather sensitive, and yet we feel that we should point out that it came our way, and it came my way this time via some other talk show hosts. We're stressing that these are rumors. We don't have definitive proof, but it's worked. Within the past 2 weeks, we thwarted a seven-city attack in the United States. We have had that confirmed by numerous sources that it was thwarted. And as a consequence, the Israeli military might do a false flag event, some kind of event, on our military forces overseas. I think possibly in Saudi Arabia, just putting the puzzle pieces together. And so we want to not spread fear, but we want to be vigilant. That's the whole idea, being conscious, being aware. We gain insight, we use our wisdom, and before you know it, they'll run out of options, and these games will have to stop. So this is about overcoming fear with knowledge and putting it to practical use. Simple as that. So if you have a chance to tune into Voices from the Heartland on Republic Broadcasting Network on Saturday. You don't want to miss that show. Now, I rarely steer anyone in the listening audience away from BBS Radio. So if you miss a show, then you certainly can get the archives at either one of the networks. It's up to you. I wouldn't miss it live, though. This is going to be a barn burner of a show. And we know we're doing the right thing because it's bothering a lot of people that the truth is getting out. That said, we're going to move into the topic of tonight's guest and his book. He's written a book called Fragments of Reality, Daily Entries of Lived Life. And I've had a chance to read this book. In fact, it's a book that you can pick up again and again and reread your favorite parts because it's some very profound and insightful teaching. I have a review of the book and the front cover of the book on my website, directlightproductions.com. Just click on books. There's a link there right within the review at the end, the last word. You click on that, and it will take you to tonight's guest's website. And we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about his work and allow him to tell you about his life. He's our guest, so he can do that. With that, I would like to bring on board Evident Footprints for the first time, my good friend, Mr. Pete Kayander. Pete, how are you this evening?
Hello, Don. I'm doing great. I'm glad to be in the show today.
Well, yeah. Now, for you, it's you're on the other side of the Atlantic.
Yes.
And so it's six or so hours later than us. So the sun is up, you know.
We're not yet. It's still dark. So
is it?
Evening or night still, I suppose.
Oh, now do you have global warming there? I'm just interested if it's spread all over the globe or just here in the United States where we have 3 feet of snow.
Yeah, I think the global freezing is here as well. It's been quite a windy and it's been not so warm and sunny. Well, I only been here like 3 years, so I don't know so much for the past, but for those years I've been, it's getting each and every year a bit worse.
Yes, and so we know that's global warming, right? When temperature goes down, the globe is going up in temperature.
Exactly.
Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Oh yeah.
Well, which aspect is true? <You know.
laughs> Maybe none of them, you know.
Yeah. I guess we should forewarn our audience that we're probably going to be doing a lot of mental gymnastics, you and I, just because you think outside the box like I do in many ways. And so there's going to be a lot of humor. So if you like to laugh, pay attention. Pay close attention to what we're going to say tonight. And we have no idea where we're going other than we're just going to let Spirit take us through this evening, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we are always serious and never serious, so you never know.
Yes, okay. Okay. All right. Well, I mentioned your book, and I guess that's maybe a good place for us to start. If you could give us a little bit of your background and how that led you to begin assimilating the information that went into the book. What inspired you and what kind of things you observed? You know the inspiration for your book, in other words.
Okay. Well, the book came about some 4 years ago. It wasn't a book in at that time. It was, I just started to actually write down in a format of blog, thoughts and ideas and observations, perceptions I had during a day. That happened like almost like 100 days, and each and every day, there's only a few days I didn't write anything, but you know, it was each and every evening, something like 30 minutes, half an hour, 1 hour, and I just put them down what I saw in the day, and that's how the book came about. Later on, I actually just collected and put it together. The book tells about things what everybody can see while you're just doing whatever you like to do, being the work like I was doing. I was doing quite a lot of things at the same time. My background is I'm an entrepreneur, I have founded a few companies in different fields. I've been living in a few countries. I've been working abroad. I've been working in Finland, different places, in internet businesses, finance, semiconductors, consulting, so on and so forth. So I've been meeting a lot of people, being in different places, seeing a lot of things, and also been studying. My educational background is from business and economics, but I'm always been interested of variety of different things in life, pretty much looking for my kind of truth and seeing things and wanting to know how things work. So I'm always been open-minded and looking for things from the perspective that why and how and asking questions. And mm-hmm. I think that's also reflected in the book as well.
Yeah, one gets the feeling, the impression, and I'm not... clear if you mentioned this to me or if it's just something that I picked up, but I had the impression that you may have been in a business meeting or could have been a big conference or a troubleshooting powwow with the corporate bosses or maybe underlings in a company, and you came out of that meeting and sat down and wrote out your thoughts, or maybe you did that when you got home at the end of the day, but there was always this recurring theme that you were reflecting on what happened that day, but you present it in a way that anyone could take the principles on that particular page. And much of what you've written is just on one page. I don't mean the book has one page. There's a couple more pages than one.
But, yeah, it was a bit long-winded, you know, I couldn't just simplify it to one page.
Yeah. But, well, you got that new printer, you had to try it out, right? And a new ream of paper, a whole new ink cartridge. What I mean to say is that you were able to encapsulate everything that happened to you in that day, or maybe the key points, and bring it into a motivational piece that may on its surface not even appear to have had anything to do with what you went through that day. And yet I had this feeling, boy, you had a rough day that day. You were dealing with these people who were not cooperating, or you were trying to encourage them to cooperate and steer the focus of the group in the right direction, and they were letting out their phobias, their fears, and their misgivings and their problems, and you sort of smoothed everything out for them. Am I way off base in making that kind of assessment, or is that part of what the inspiration was?
Yeah, it was quite a rough time then. I was doing three things at once. I was studying actually two times as much as a full-time student. Then I was just earning my living as a consulting, and on top of that I was starting up a company. I was getting funding that was the semiconductor company, and it was quite a difficult time to get funding, and there were also some challenges within the company. So mm-hmm. yes, it was quite a hectic time.
Saying it's maybe a balance of your own turmoil and their turmoil.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go into details. It was quite nasty in a way, but there was challenges, not so much from my side, but you know, all together, just putting and keeping things together, and it was also quite a difficult time to get funding for companies. So
yeah,
all those things together, and it was something that, you know, sometimes from some pieces you can exactly hear things, and even in some of the poems. There's a few poems in my book as well. So one of those are also quite loaded in a way.
Mm-hmm.
The most.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to stir up old memories or anything like that. I but you know, we listen to quite a variety of topics on this show, and if you've had a chance to hear some of them, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Certainly the listening audience does, and people are constantly looking for a solution to, or a means of solving a problem. It might not be a specific solution, but in general terms, okay? And I think there's so much insight in your writing. I think it would be really interesting if we could talk about your approach to problem solving. regardless of what the problem is. You know, you have this problem and everybody's uptight about, well, we have to do this and we have to do that, and how are we going to do this, and we can't do this, and it always turns out like this. And, you know, people are, you mentioned this way up front in the book, the belief system versus knowledge. And that has been a recurring message on this show and from me on even the other shows that I visit, that we're caught in what other people tell us things are or the way it is. You know, we're caught in their agenda and we can't seem to extricate ourselves. Yet you make it seem very simple. And that's the message I want to bring forward. People could get your book and they can find all this out. But we're on the show so we can talk about this too, and exchange these ideas, because basically in the book you're just laying it out there. And I can tell you everything I read touched me in a way that I can see a place in my life where I can apply what you wrote. And I think that's important for us to share that with the listening audience. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the way I actually wrote it is that I didn't tell about what happened in the day. That's typically what do you do? You describe what happens. Then I went there and I was in the meeting and blah, blah. This is the regular way.
Yeah.
I ignored all of that because they are just the details and they're not interesting. What is interesting is how do you perceive and how do you feel and experience those things what you're doing. And because the experiences are your own, they are profound, and typically if you learn something out of those ones, those are the things if you can pass along and tell to other people, I think that makes the message more appealing for others, so they can also reflect and find themselves. And hey, I've been in this situation, and that sounds familiar. So I've been only describing about these observations, and what comes to the problem solving. I don't think there's any problems. There's only challenges and opportunities, and it's just also how do you see things and putting things into perspective. It's just a matter how do you take things how they come. And yes, life is rather simple, you know. Stop thinking and just be in the moment and see really what is in there. Many times we have belief systems which prevent us seeing what's truly out there. So we only hear what we want to hear, and we only know what we already know, so we only see what we know. But that's not exactly what is happening in the situations. This helps if you're in a business meetings, this helps wherever you are. And that's pretty much my message as well in the book, that, you know, there's a lot of things and a lot of challenges, but those are opportunities, you know, for the personal growth as well.
Okay, well, you covered the whole gamut. Thanks for being on the show. I think you understand how I'm presenting this. I'm kind of voicing it like people who email me or call in to the show, or people I just run into every day in my own life. There are people that, and you know those people, and everybody out there in the listening audience knows these people, that are so wrapped up in a particular problem that they can't see the forest for the trees. They can't see really what's going on, that most of this chaos is going on inside themselves, right?
Yep.
And so you make a suggestion, and in fact there's a calming, soothing effect to how you write in this book, that if somebody's uptight and they start reading what you've written, it's like it's encoded with some special language that causes you to relax and to go inside yourself. And I think it's very well written in that respect. The people that are, you know, I agree with your definition of a problem. I might add that all a problem is undesirable results. When we have a problem, we're just not getting the results that we would prefer, right?
Yeah. Or we're finding ourselves in the middle of, you know, situations we'd rather not be.
Yeah, and often we created those situations ourselves, yet we seek through habit, because we're always taking direction from someone else instead of from ourselves, we sort of think, well, if I'm always, maybe this is subconscious too, because I don't think most people analyze in a positive sense, in a life-changing sense. what is going on in any given moment. It's when they become completely overcome by all of the circumstances, and they start freaking out, that they say, wait a minute, what's going on here? You know, everything is, this is not what I want. This is not what I would choose for myself. And so then they look at it. They look at it when they're at the lowest point in their life or in the lowest point in a particular situation. And you're sort of saying belief systems, which are, they're created for us, are they not? I mean, we're told this, you should believe. This is what you should believe. We're instructed how to believe, and we don't question that enough, do we? And recognize that it's not about belief, because we're just assuming when we believe. We don't have definitive proof of something. And so how can we hang our faith or our convictions on something that we can't see and touch and feel? It's always ethereal in that sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of second-hand information we just take in and we never process it. That's pretty much what is education as nowadays as well. It's just that you take in information, you don't process it, but you just then export it, put it out, and that's how it works. The same with the newspapers, media. There's a lot of these things we take for granted and we don't consider them and think about it and just select what is important for us. We just pick all them in, and then at the end of the day, being 12 years or how many years into school, and from the childhood, ever since the childhood, you know, we take all those things in, and look at the world today. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, which might not be exactly how we would like them to be. So these are the belief systems which are working for us, and that's also why we may feel like that we are not in control of our lives, or we are not feeling the expectations, we are not getting enough from our lives. And after, it might be that you have never considered what you want and who you are, and all these questions which are rather important from one's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Last night we had our network co-founder, Doug Newsom, on as a guest. One of the first questions I posed to him was, what do you think causes fear? What creates fear in your mind? Or in anyone's mind? And he said, the loss of control or the lack of control.
Okay.
And that was an interesting definition, because he has made, he'll tell you himself, he has made millions of dollars several times in his life, and he's lost it all. and he's, you know, he's happy with where he is, whether he has it or not. He's come to realize it doesn't matter if he's a millionaire or he's not a millionaire. He's still the same person.
No.
And you use that word control. I caught that. Shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. So there is a recurring theme coming up here that people, when they feel that they're out of control, they feel disempowered, right?
No.
And helpless, in a way.
Exactly, and what is loss of control? It's, are we ever in control? Can you control what is happening today, tomorrow? I don't think so. Just things happen, you think you're in control, but in actuality, you are not in control. So, always, we are living in the moment, and the new is ever-changing, and is uncertain. So, the uncertainty is what we are afraid of, and that's not even true. It's we are not even afraid of uncertainty. We are uncomfortable with uncertainty because we cannot control. We don't know what is going to happen, and that makes us a bit awkward. What is really the issue is that we fear only the what we know, and we pretty much fear the fear itself. The idea of fear, and that's quite a, well, the easy way to put this and explain it is that imagine you're having a cancer or something that you know you might be going to die, but you don't know for sure yet. Are you going to die or are you going to not die? Is it two days, 2 weeks, 2 years, 20 years? But when you know that you have only 6 days or 6 weeks to live, it's even easier to go with that than with the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. And we rely on the doctor to tell us, and the doctor says, oh, you have cancer and you're going to die. You know, you have about a month to go.
Exactly.
And then we hear these stories constantly of people who outlive the doctor. Okay. And sometimes that's a young doctor telling them that. Okay. So the point is that there's another example of a hidden belief. We put all of our trust in the people that are proclaimed to have some special knowledge, and we would hope a doctor would if he went to medical school for 7 years, college and medical school, and interned in a hospital, that they would know something about what they're practicing, and yet they don't seem to come up with the solutions that we are looking for. The drugs are the solution, or the expensive treatments, chemotherapy are the solution, or all kinds of experimentation. And yet when we talk about things that we know, those of us who are in the know and less in fear, and let's say, I don't want to use the word educated so much, because that's maybe submitted to the system to be educated.
Mm-hmm.
It's to be programmed, or it's to be indoctrinated in a philosophy or a mindset. And we're talking about getting outside of that matrix, that box, that maze, or that loop that seems to just be spinning, 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 and we're going around in circles. When we can step outside of ourselves and see what's really going on, often it's not as dire as it seems, and doctors do make mistakes, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look back into history, you know, there's always been one truth in a way, which has been the mainstream way of doing things. And if you look like the medical practices 200 years ago, you may not, you know, wanna be part of their practices there. And this is the same for our age as well. There's mm-hmm. a lot of taboos and things, you know, which are not allowed to be talked about, and there are miracle healings and whatever is happening, you know. It's not that our doctors know everything. For me, it looks like that they know a lot about sickness, but very little about health. And this is quite also reflected in our society.
Mm-hmm.
We reward not those negative things in many cases. We are not rewarding positive things, like you would pay your doctor when you're in a good health, and you will not pay a doctor, for example, if you're getting sick. And that's how it's actually supposed to be. You know, you want to be healthy, you want a good shape, and pretty much the same thing happens in many other fields as well.
Uh huh. I think it would be an interesting concept outside the matrix to have an agreement with a medical practitioner of any type. It doesn't matter what's their specialty is. The deal is you cure this disease, or you fix the cause of this disease. You help me to create that healthy state, and you will be paid. And if you fail at your work, you won't be paid. I think the doctors would have the motivation to do the right thing, wouldn't they?
Exactly. It's like an insurance business. You pay them as long as nothing happens, and something happens, they pay you.
Yeah, but they've somehow changed that game. They don't pay you, and they take your money anyway.
Exactly.
And
well,
and that's called crime. You know.
Yeah, that's been a lot around that as well.
Yeah. So, what is the point we're making here? Well, the outcome isn't necessarily what. It's surely not what we believe it is. In fact, you're recommending that we just let go of belief, that we give it up, and we try taking responsibility and becoming aware and gaining that insight. And you give some suggestions in the book as to how to do that. Would you like to share some of those ideas?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to become aware of the beliefs you're having, and that's not so easy either. Many times you're the last person to admit that you're having some kind of beliefs. And how do you do that? How do you get rid of your beliefs, and how do you start to observe them? And that's quite a tricky thing. And the only thing I found out that you can do it is you have to be aware what is happening right now, in every moment. What are you doing? So you have to monitor or observe how you act, how you behave, what are you doing, how you speak, what do you speak, and all those things, what are you doing, you start to be like the second head on your shoulder and see what this guy is doing. Mm-hmm. And if you manage to do that, you know, I think it's quite difficult to do it in the beginning. You snooze off, you fall asleep and forget what you were doing. But if you manage to do that, you start to see that you might get weird reactions from other people. You know, maybe you said something funny because they know the situation looks funny, or that they didn't like what they heard. And if you can pick those signals, those are subtle ways to understand that, hey, maybe it's me that I've been doing something and I've realized that I said something I supposed not to say. And there's those little helps and ideas I'm giving out in the book, and it's the main message is that you start to look within and start to be awake in the moment, and the more is happening in your life, the better you can practice this, and it's practice is your everyday life. Any situation is a possibility to practice and becoming better in this game of life.
Mm-hmm. Now, in our state of consciousness in the present moment, and that's different for everybody. No two people are alike. I'm sure you would agree with that statement. And so everyone is sensing and thinking and feeling something different. And I like to bring up the word feeling, because I know many people who pray with a sense of feeling. And I know many people who are not religious at all. And I don't think you have to be religious to pray. I think prayer is a very high vibrational thought pattern, which is basically communicating or communicated most effectively when it's done with emotion, when you're putting out your true feeling, because you do that from the heart and not from the mind. And all the people I know that say that they pray and they've seen miracles happen, whatever the miracle is, we're not really qualifying or quantifying it as such, but just to just to describe the phenomenon, those people are convinced that putting the feeling into the prayer and really meaning it, not being superficial, is what makes a prayer successful. And it would probably go hand in hand with focusing your intention on your goals, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I was just about to say that what is a prayer? It's setting an intention. It's intention to do something, and you're intending, and that's, I think that could be another description of what prayer is.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah,
and one doesn't have to be religious to do that. It's available.
Exactly.
It's available to everybody, individually and collectively.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing to also ponder and consider one's own life and think about what is important and what do you want to do and where you want to put in your focus. A lot of the time we just worrying or we just looking to the past and thinking about the things what have we been doing and maybe regretting one of the things and saying that
are you playing a song for us tonight?
yes. Another phone call coming in somewhere early, but you know we let them ring.
If you need to take that call, go ahead. We'll wait for it.
Yeah, I think might be that the audience wouldn't like that too much. They only can hear another one part of the conversation. They have to guess the rest.
Well,
yeah, when I was saying that, and I was describing in the book that, you know, I call it a TV, like that you have the reality TV, and you typically, you don't want to be in the reality TV. The reality TV is the time when you're now here. And the other time when you're not here means that you're still doing it right now, but you're either in the History Channel and or in the Skyfight Channel. So Skyfight is the future. You're wondering, you're having your scenarios, what's going to happen next. And the History Channel is the obviously the one where you're looking backwards and seeing the things you've already done, and you know, you're making what if scenarios, what if I, you know, didn't do that, or so on and so forth. So being in the moment is only thing you can do, and you can then change channels if you like, but you know, the best show in town is typically happening right now, and it's always new and it's never repeated, so why not use that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's living in the now, and that's such a difficult concept for a lot of people, because we do, I mean, even when I'm doing research, I'm going in the past, in a sense, but my attempt is always to see it in the now, to see how it's affecting us still, to come to an awareness of what we must let go of. You could say, eventually say, let go of everything. Don't hold on to anything. But we might forget our phone numbers and where we live if we really take that to heart, right? We might not make it home tonight.
Well, yeah, well, there's many ways to forget everything and just get rid of things. Many times when I talk about mind, I mean the monkey mind, like in the East they call it monkey mind, that it's constantly talking something and you're not in control of what it's saying. And one way to see is that, you know, if you could actually get rid of the, it's like a constant radio or whatever noise, and you are not in control of it, you cannot switch it off, and that's what is happening in your head all the time. And even if you would like to focus on writing an email or doing something else, there's someone talking in your head and wanting to get the attention away from what you're doing. But, you know, that's what I'm saying, that if you can switch that off and use your mind when you need it, when you need to think about something carefully, plan or do those things, then you can use your mind. But on the other times, you just let it go, and you know, it's not bothering you at all. And if you can do that, it means that whenever you are in the moment, there's a lot of things you can observe, and you have more time or more bandwidth to feel, smell, taste, and be in the moment, because you are not distracted by those thoughts and other things in your mind. And it sounds very simple, and it's the most simple thing. We are all in the moment all the time, but we choose not to be in the moment. We are somewhere else, and that makes us absent-minded being in the situations in a way that, you know, well, may not be the best outcomes. For example, you say something you don't want to say, or you act in a way that you're not supposed to act, and did not want to act, and then you regret later. But if you stay in the moment, you can always feel and be aware what you're doing. And one could say that you consider before you act, or you consider before you say, and this way you become more harmonious and peaceful, and mostly the result is that you're more happy and relaxed, and it's just a lighter way to live.
Mm-hmm. Now, you brought up something early on when we first started talking. You said that we are often the last one to recognize, and I guess it really doesn't matter what it is, if we're the last one recognizing that about ourselves or within ourselves, whether it's fear or something that we're doing to undermine our own personal success or our consciousness or whatever it is. The thought entered my mind, hearing what you said, a solution for that person would be to get in line and watch everybody in front of you go through that process. How long do you think that person would want to stand in line watching everyone move through that? Right? It would motivate you to change, right? And
exactly.
Or to allow the change to occur. We hold on to security, don't we? We like this thing of, well, I like things stable and nobody's rocking the boat and therefore I don't have any problems. When we do have problems.
Yeah, we deny. We are in a denial. We pretend that we are in control. Our mind creates us an illusion that things are okay and we are secure and nothing bad is gonna happen and life is as it always been. It's the same and you know. But this is nonsense. You know, it's always a new moment and we never know what's gonna happen. And if we are not accepting the uncertainty, then we're building these buffers and fences around us and we pretend that we are safe. And what is safe? There's nothing safe in a way that, you know, you have to expose yourself and live. Many times, a lot of people live like they have the handbrake on when they're driving. So you, for example, you say that, well, someone asks what you're doing, and then you tell that, you know, well, I'm working in this company, but I'd rather actually would be somewhere else. Or you express that you do something, but you would not like to do it, actually. Mm-hmm. So this is like leaving a handbrake on. You're not doing 100% what you want to do. You're holding back. Or you're pursuing your career, or you're doing something you really want to do, and or hobby or whatever, and you want to be good at that. But then once again, you might be afraid of the success. You might be afraid of something, and these things are also holding you back. And these thoughts are actually making it very difficult for you to success and so the things you're doing. So there's a lot of these things happening in our little mind. And it means that we also lose a lot of good opportunities and possibilities and the beauty of the world while we're thinking and being in that history or Sci-Fi Channel.
Mm-hmm. While you're saying that, I recall my career in music or other things that I've done, even what I'm doing right now, and I love what I'm doing right now. I'm doing lots of things. Ask me what one of them is. I don't know if I could tell you, really. Well, I have a radio show, and you're on my show. You're my guest. Welcome.
Thank you.
But I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm researching, I'm learning things, I'm interacting with lots of different people all around the world. And I don't know what else there is to do, but I've chosen to do those things, and yet I know I'm going to be doing other things. I have other things to look forward to, and I'm not afraid of those things. I'm not afraid of what I'm doing now. I'm not afraid of what I did, and I'm not afraid of what will come. I also see it all as one continuous stream, that I've been doing it all along, and I'm still doing it, and I will keep on doing it. So my perspective might be different from the average person, but I've been around those people that just complain about everything that's going on around them. In a way, I'll say, well, why don't you change your vocation? Why don't you leave that company? Or, you know, if you're in an abusive relationship with another person, and it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman, why don't you step outside of that? Well, I need this because I have to survive. This is allowing me to survive. It's a security blanket, or it's an excuse for a security blanket. And they're not really comfortable with any of that. Even the security blanket is itchy, you know. They have to scratch when they use it, or if they're using it to stay warm, they're still cold.
No,
they're in, like you said, they're in denial, and they're unconscious really about the fact that they can simply make a choice and change everything. They can choose to be the way they would prefer things to be, right?
Yeah, we have always possibility and opportunity every moment to choose what we do, how we want to, maybe not the situations or circumstances, but how we take those. We can always decide how we take on, what is our take on different things, what are coming our way. So many times we label things that we are in the work, we are in a holiday, and we are this, we are in this, we having this title and or this job and so on. But those are just words.
Mm-hmm.
Those are categories we've been putting, and we've been actually loading a lot of expectations. Most of the words have a lot of emotional or some kind of expectations we're putting on those, and then we are expecting ourselves to fulfill those expectations, and then life becomes a process of fulfilling, and it's more like that you have to do things than it, and it's not like that you can do or would love to do things. And more you're in the category of have to, then less you are enjoying your life.
Yeah.
And very good way to do this is that, you know, if you have a monthly calendar on your wall or somewhere, and each and every morning you wake up, how do you feel? Is it a smiley face or is the smiley a bit downwards? You draw that each and every day there, and after a month, check it out and see that, you know, how many smiley faces there are. If there are less than 20 smiley faces and you're going 20 days of work, you know, well, you know, just start to consider something, or, you know, you pick the how many smiley faces you want to have there. But I think that's a good indicator of the life. If you're just full of energy and you just, you know, barely can wait to jump out of the bed and go and do whatever you like to do today, you know, that's living. But if you're like, you know, hey, I just want to sleep and, you know, pass this day, you know, and then you in the mode of I have to do these things, and well, that's one way to live. We can choose how we live, but, you know, there's other ways as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, we came out of an industrial age, and it's really difficult to say when that was exactly, but you might say sometime around the early 1980s to the mid-1980s, all of a sudden, the powers that be, those that rule this planet, or at least in their own minds feel that they're ruling the planet, came to this conclusion that we are now officially in this information age, and we're in an age of service. Everything is service-oriented. And so all the corporations, particularly in America, left America and went somewhere else. They said, now you are all in service to the information age, basically is what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And yet, those of us that bring out certain kinds of information meet resistance from those controllers, those powers that be, so to speak. And I'm just speaking in the generality, in the general consciousness of the masses. But most people don't think through what I'm saying here. And so when we bring out certain kinds of information that lead one to the truth or show the truth or demonstrate the truth or communicate the truth, it's repressed. The powers that be prefer that information doesn't come out. So are we really in an information age, or are we in a control of information age? And is there, if that is the case, then how does one get out of that mindset, that belief system?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few things in this one. One could say that we're in an information age, but what is information? It's bits and pieces of data.
Yeah.
And if you don't process that information, it's just bulk. And I think that's pretty much what we're having. We're just recycling this information, and we're not creating anything new. And we, like I referred before, that, you know, seldom we think and ask questions and be creative, innovative in that sense. And what is behind control? That's typically, there's also fear behind control. You want to control your environment in order to just. Just to be safe in your mind, and that's one projection of fear. And in collective level, you see that in our everyday life and in society. And typically how this is done in the information ages, and especially in our age, but also in the past, is being by centralizing things.
Mm-hmm.
We centralize no matter pretty much any segment of the society, you see all the sectors are somehow centralized. It's the, we're having government, you know, government is everywhere. They are in monopoly of the education, almost in the healthcare, and monetary issues, pretty much of the economy nowadays. You pick and choose, you know, there's centralization in everywhere, and the power is taken away from the people, and there are a few people in the top of the pile who are then making decisions for everyone. But we are allowing this to happen. It's just that we collectively and individually are choosing that to happen, that we want to have someone else to make the hard decisions for us, and mm-hmm. we are not ready to be in a situation we are responsible of our own lives and take the responsibility, because freedom and responsibility are two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
The more freedom you have, the more responsibility you have as well.
Yes, so true. Now, I guess the industrial age was humanity in the hamster wheel, okay, physically, right?
And I'm not sure we're out of that one either.
Well, I think I was going to say now the information age is the hamster wheel inside our heads.
Yeah, but also it's not so obvious, but we are still in the same hamster field. Think about the taxes and all those things which take away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And many times it's more than 50% of all what you produce is taken away from you. Some ages ago that was called slavery. We may not now be physically in the agricultural fields and be there physically working, but as a matter of fact, we are physically working exactly the same way like in the fields. But there's a thing called money between now. You earn the money and then you give it away. But that money is hard-earned money you've been working for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different way of doing things. But, you can do it in the information age more elegantly, but underlying principles are the same.
It's an invisible ball and chain and invisible shackles and invisible whip.
Yeah.
Like in the former slavery you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably still goes on today in its original form anyway.
Yeah, same tricks.
Yes. What question can I bring up here? I want to react to what you're saying, because this is moving along. I can feel this vibration going up higher now, you know. So a person takes responsibility. Once they begin taking responsibility, they have to come to a certain level of honesty with themselves about what they have created, either through their action or what they have created through their inaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what responsibility is. Now, it doesn't mean blaming it on someone else, even though we can observe what others are doing. Ultimately, we are responsible for ourselves. When you mention health, for example, or health care, you said. Health care, if someone's taking responsibility for themselves, begins with themselves. Watch what you eat, watch your exercise, watch what you're putting into your body and into your mind in that sense. Now, if you're really doing the right things, and I say the right things, the things that are best for you, instead of just blindly following like a sheep what you're told to do, which is more the same programming or the propaganda or the belief system, you should not even have to worry about health care. You will have health.
No.
And you will have the care right there. And that really is just paying attention, isn't it? It doesn't cost any more money to be healthy. In fact, it costs more money to be sick.
Exactly. You constantly have to eat bad and have bad habits to remain sick, because our body is always trying to be well. And it's self-healing and it's an amazing thing, but we are abusing it quite a lot in the different various ways, and in most of the ways we are not even aware of it. And these are the things that, you know, when you wake up and start to look around you and look yourself and start to take responsibility, it means also that you start to have to act, and you have to change a lot of things in your life if you be in the autopilot mode. And at the moment our society doesn't support so much of strong individuals who know what they're doing and have strong opinions and want to enjoy their life. These are the things which are not encouraged. They're not encouraged when you're growing up, or they're not encouraged when you're an adult and living in the society. It's more easier to control, and it's more easier to take money and power and things away from people if they're passive.
Mm-hmm. So really our solutions then rely in our laziness or our overcoming laziness by just recognizing that we're lazy, or that we're procrastinating, or that we're in denial, or that we're in fear, or that we're not even paying attention to any of it. We're unconscious.
No. Living dead.
Yeah. You and I both know Michael St. Clair very well, and Michael and many others talk about this issue of interfering with another's karma or another's free will, and yet we're trying to bring information, and sometimes it's referred to as enlightenment. Let's say information of a higher vibration that leads one to a more realistic perception of what is real. Now that's redundant. I said realistic and real in the same sentence, but I think you understand what I'm saying. To the truth. In other words, we're looking at the truth and the unknown in the same context. That if we have made a decision to do a certain thing or to accomplish a certain thing, and it doesn't work out the way we planned it to work out, it might just be a matter of tweaking a couple of things here and there to get it right, instead of looking at the whole thing as a failure. We have a tendency to do that, or not even start out of the fear of failing at it in the first place, because somebody said, you are not to do that. What makes us give up our sovereignty so easily?
I think it's quite a hard to live, born in this world and be independent, because the society has been so long in the way it's been now. You learn that, you know, from the ever since you're breastfeed, you know, you get the things what are happening around you. You're in your family, in your society, and then you go to school, and then you go to work, and you observe and find these things, and you read a lot about those things, you know, what has been happening in the past, and from the books, and you watch movies, and all these things, they pretty much nowadays, they support the idea that there's some great father figure, and he's going to help you to do things, and don't worry, you don't have to do anything, and everything's going to be okay, and there's this great government or whoever, and they will handle things. So there's always someone else who knows better than you yourself. And when you live in a society like this, it's quite difficult to get away from it, like we spoke about the beliefs, these are so deeply within us that we don't recognize them. They are something that we don't see. We don't see the patterns our mind is thinking and how it's filtering things for us. So It's everything which is not known for us is also a threat for our beliefs and our thoughts, and we feel uncomfortable in this situation. So there's a natural resistance towards anything new, towards anything unknown, and this makes it quite a difficult in the beginning to get away from the shackles and the things we used to do.
Mm-hmm. In respect to that, some people surmise that we actually have it in our DNA. It's so ingrained in us that we don't stand a chance of overcoming it unless we change our DNA that has been going on for so long. I wonder what would happen. Tell me what you would think about this. If a certain number of babies were born tomorrow, and for whatever reason they couldn't tune into that control frequency, how long do you think it would change, or how long would it take for the world to change into something of a higher vibration if the new babies tomorrow, and whether that's 1% or 1/10 of the percent of the whole world's population, was unable to accept what they were being taught or told to do and came here with a higher ideal, a higher vibration? That may be a difficult question, but that's a very philosophical question, maybe very practical.
Yeah, it's quite practical, and as a matter of fact, I think in a way it's also happening at this moment, provided that these babies are growing up in a isolated environment, that they are not picking up the things what are happening in the society, or that they are like a Teflon in a way, that they don't absorb the main population's ideas and beliefs. Well, it takes a few generations.
Yeah,
but minimum it's like the 15-20 years when they're growing up, more like a 20-30 years. But you know, typically it takes a few generations, and maybe 1% of the population or something.
Yeah, well, the reason I said they just couldn't tune into that frequency of control was to not have to require them to be isolated. The ideal situation would be that we would see how they act, and we might learn something from them or become aware of that difference, you see. We have all been labeled as sheep to comply with the system, to get, and that is really a question of survival. In other words, well, I tried being myself, but it's not working out, so therefore I give up, I give in, and I'll comply. Yes, you're correct that that's been going on for a long time. Yet there are those in the system, raised in that system, not with the frequency protections that I'm describing, you know, in this hypothetical sense. In other words, those of us that have come to the realization that it doesn't have to be this way, that we can choose something for ourselves. Do you see more people coming to that on their own, or this might come across to some people like a dire prediction. I'm not asking you to predict anything, but from your consciousness, from your awareness, do you see more people coming to the realization that they can empower themselves, or are they going to fall by the wayside?
I think you have to make a choice. And either you can do it free willingly, voluntarily, or then you might be forced to do it in one way or another. And the latter way is that, you know, your external circumstances force you to do something. You're out of job and you're distressed in some way, and then you have to face the facts. And then you have a choice whether you will keep on going on the route you've been walking all along, or then you choose something different. Mm-hmm. And I think it's quite obvious that nowadays the situations are changing in the global scale in many ways, from the nature's perspective to the man-made society. So yes, I think people are waking up, and they're seeing that now the environment and the society we're living is not working properly and smoothly anymore. So they are starting to look different. And alternatives and questioning things, and this is always an opportunity, and we always have a choice. You know, we're living in the moment, so we always have a choice to choose something different and not follow the old patterns and forms we've been used to think and live the life the way we've been so happily living without being happy.
Yeah. We have become so complacent and apathetic, I think, to what's going on around us. Even though many of us are not happy with the circumstances, it merely required, when some monumental decision was made for mankind, maybe about moving from one country to another, or what time you wake up, or what time you have to go to sleep, or what kind of job you have to do, or how many people you can have in your family, on and on and on, or, you know, what your beliefs must be, that when through our failure to speak up at that moment, we have permitted that to happen. So we have, in a sense, also shared in the responsibility of those decisions. And I think those of us that have, in our own way, at least tried to bring an awareness to others, have come to the point where we're considering that we don't even have a right to do that. That it's totally up to that person, and that they're that responsible for themselves that they should do that on their own. You get the meaning of what I'm saying?
I think there's a difference between telling something and preaching.
Yes.
And coming back to responsibility, we are only responsible of ourselves first. And there's a lot of things we can change in ourselves, and the best way to do something is to be a good practical example. Your actions speak more, many times louder than the talk you're doing. So the talk is unnecessary. You start to walk and the others will follow, you know, if they like to do that. So in that way, if you walk your talk and you are consistent what you're doing, this means that you are already broadcasting quite loud and clear what you're doing. And maybe that's the only preaching you have to do, and it's not preaching at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's a fine line, too, because there are always those that are still going to be operating in the one system, trying their hardest to get into, and I say trying, you see, that's that real nebulous word. They're attempting to move out of the matrix or outside the box and consider new possibilities. It's really, it always boils down to going inside yourself, doesn't it? And listening to the silence.
Exactly. If you can hear the silence, typically there's the monkey mind talking to you and you have to get rid of it. But there are means to get to the silence. But the silence is the muse or the creative force which the artists are very familiar with. So the silence starts to speak to you, and this is the moment you can experience when sometimes when you're doing a physical exercise, you're skiing or something, and you may be physically exhausted, but you have a crystal clear mind, and you are one with the world. You're feeling the slope, and or you're driving, or when you're sailing, or whatever you're doing, you might get these feelings. I think everybody has these moments, and if you can turn those moments into your everyday existence, that's the way you experience the world, that there's a great silence out of which the new is emerging, that brings a lot of new opportunities into your life.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the monkey mind again, okay?
Yeah.
Then we also have the 100th monkey concept, which is, you know, the monkeys sort of learn, after the 100th monkey does it, they all get it. I guess maybe a way to get out of the monkey mind when you're in the grocery store and you're reaching for those bananas, stop yourself and say, wait a minute, that's the monkey mind. But
yeah, use orange instead.
Exactly. Now some people will be very offended by that term because they've never heard it used before, and some will laugh. But, you know, it's just another way to show us a concept. That's all it is. Or it's another way of looking at who we are and what we're doing. It's not really passing judgment per se, because there in judgment, one person is seeing themselves above another person and with the right to tell them what they can and cannot do, or what the penalty is for doing what they're doing or what they did. You have all these, you know, there are all these different circumstances that come up when we talk about control. Isn't that so, or is it all just one thing, ultimately?
Yeah, I think in in a way, you could say that it all boils down to fear. And it's a personal thing. It's everything is subjective in this world we're living. And everything's related to you, and it's about you and nobody else. And it just doesn't matter how we project those things from within, from our mind to the external world. Some prefer to control others and overcome their fears this way. And it's not actually overcoming the fear at all. It's just passing it along and getting coping with the situation. And this creates quite a lot of mess around us. And so it's quite important to look inside and take responsibility of one's actions and start to realize that before you can help others, you have to help yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's like you cannot teach someone golf or pretty much anything if you're not mastering the field yourself first. And it seems that we're telling other people what to do, but we are not following our own talk.
Yeah. Now, that brings to mind what nature goes through with man's influence or without man's influence. There's two different things. When man interferes with nature, nature seems to lower in vibration. Other than if it's cleaning up the water, I think it's going to raise the Earth's vibration. But in general, we tend to spoil the water. We put chemicals in it. We contaminate it. And so the quality of this vibration of the planet goes downward. Animals, like nature, have it built into them. They just do what they do, and they know what to do. In virtually every aspect of their lives. Now, they may learn certain things from their parents, just like humanity does, like a human being does. What do you think our solutions, or where do you think our solutions lie in overcoming those problems? Is it simply a question or a matter of us taking personal responsibility and then recognizing how we are interfering with the Earth or how we interfere with nature? Because we seem to have this predisposition to want to control everything, to be the rulers of everything. And in our own little ways, we rule nature, we rule the animals, because we ourselves are being ruled. What do you think is maybe a way for us to get out of that? That's another hamster wheel, I think, you know. A very destructive one.
Yeah. I think we have to change perspective in life. I think what you're describing is telling that, you know, there's a separation. We feel that we humans or individuals are separate from the world. We separate from the nature. And the nature is not affected on us. But that's not true. We are the Earth. We are in the physical sense. We are the Earth. We're breathing the air. We build upon those atoms, you know, which are coming out of the Earth, and we drinking the water. We eating the food which is coming out of the Earth as well. So whatever we put out is coming in, and this loop is something we haven't figured out. That you typically do not want to put garbage on your house. You don't want to, you know, you want to be clean in that sense. And that's something we haven't figured out, that our huge big house is this planet called Earth. And whatever goes around comes around. And also, if you look the past, our history, we've been pretty good in destruction. Mm-hmm. We've been destroying things. We haven't still learned to create things. It doesn't take that much to destroy. It takes a bit more than to create something out of nothing, out of a few elementals and put things in place. Nature is creating. It's constantly building, and it's a positive force in a way. And so far, humanity has been pretty good in destruction and very little in creative ways. And I think we are the only one who are out of sync with nature, and we have to change that in order to something happen. And it's once again, I'm repeating myself, but it's a responsibility issue that if you start to act responsible in a way that you are in harmony with the life, it will affect a lot of things what you're doing. You have to change the way you're living, you have to change the way you're eating, you have to change pretty much anything and everything you're doing in your life. And we have the power. You're using money to buy things, you're making choices what to do and what not to do, and these things then are reflected, and when a lot of people together are making these individual choices, then we make a difference.
Mm-hmm. I know mankind, individually and collectively, is always in this perpetual search for happiness. And we have been taught in more recent times what will make us happy. Now, we have been taught, I say, but maybe that's propaganda, or maybe that's advertising, or maybe that's just a lot of hype, or we say a lot of hooey. And hooey is anything you want it to be, but anything but real. And man is in the search for happiness, and when I think about the different ways our problems can be presented to us, we seem to delight in those that make us laugh. So when we want to have a good time, we go see a comedian. Mm-hmm. And what does the comedian usually make us laugh about? Isn't it usually ourselves? Isn't it the way we act and the way we think and the things that we do? And the good comedians are really good at getting outside the box and describing it like you did earlier. You have to be able to step outside yourself and kind of like the two-headed person. Watch what the other head is doing and pay attention, become aware of that, and decide what you're going to change. Choose what you're going to change. And comedians are great at doing that. The better ones really are quite ingenious, I think. And they're doing the other thing. They're showing us that the way we can look at what we do can actually make us laugh. So you think we take ourselves too seriously?
Yeah, always. You should never be serious. You know, it's just, you know, you should just take life more lightly. You know, there's nothing we have to do, and why bother? You know, obviously you have to give 100% what you're doing and put emphasis on those things. But you know, still, you know, you should not just take things seriously.
Mm-hmm. Now, if what you're doing is too serious, then maybe maybe you should give consideration to the fact that you should find something that doesn't make you feel so serious.
Yeah, happiness and joy, they are not about being serious, you know. When you're happy and, you know, enjoy what you're doing, you're not serious. You're just, you know, relaxed and you're in a good atmosphere and you know, things go smoothly and nicely. And that's the way we want to be. And that's our natural way of being. That's our natural state of being. But we have forgotten this. And mainly it's due to our mind, this talking mind, which is projecting all the time and extrapolating from the past to the future, and we reflecting and projecting the happiness to the external things, ideas and moments. So the happiness is always something which is not now. It's something we're pursuing. We're going to the future. When I get this thing, or when I'm buying this, or I'm going to the holiday, then I'm gonna be happy, or when I'm retiring, I'm gonna be happy. But those things are only thoughts, and these thoughts are never here.
Mm-hmm.
So, as long as we do this game, it doesn't really matter where we're projecting the happiness. As long as it's outside of ourselves, we are in this perpetual motion which never stops. We're always desiring something else after we get what we wanted a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, if one were successful in escaping the monkey mind, or putting the monkey mind to rest, or just causing the monkey mind to go somewhere else, what would they replace the monkey mind with?
Nothing.
Nothing. Oh, so we would become like politicians then, is what you're saying.
No, I would say the politicians are like a third wheel, and what do you do with the third wheel? You usually want to get rid of it.
Yeah. That's the same thing, though, I think. That's like getting rid of the monkey mind.
Yeah.
It's how you, I guess it's how you see it. And it's not just politicians. I mean, it's that aspect of ourselves that doesn't make us happy and doesn't make us feel successful. What do you think the true nature of abundance is? Because we seem to make it this illusory fiat money system or the usury credit system. That is always measured in terms of success and abundance. What do you feel abundance really is?
It's freedom. It's freedom of fear. It's freedom of, it's independence. Like I said, we're always in the moment. So if you feel happy in the moment and your happiness is not attached to any external circumstances or situations or possessions, you can be like your radio station owner, you know, can be happy whether with or without money. It mm-hmm. doesn't make any difference. You know, money comes, money goes. So this is the true state of happiness and joy. And I think that's the way to live. And typically, if you look at the system now, Franz Oppenheimer said some time ago that there's only two ways to earn a living. Either you do it with economic means, which is that you do something that others find valuable. In other words, you exchange some things to another things,
mm-hmm.
and this is mutually beneficial, and it's a voluntary exchange. You are not forcing anybody to do anything. So like we are now discussing, and some people are happy to listen, and if they don't like it, they go away and switch off the radio, go somewhere else. And if I don't like to be here, I just, you know, hang up, and you do the likewise. So we're doing this mutually,
mm-hmm.
As a beneficial service to each other. And another way to do things is then the political means. So there's economic and political ways of doing things. And the political means is a label for those things where you're forcing other people to comply with you. So it's not a two-way street, it's a one-way street. You take, but you are not giving anything back.
Mm-hmm.
And many times you look around, you see that there's a lot of politics around. And the political way only works when someone has already produced something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not creating anything new. You're only taking from someone who already has done something.
Yeah.
So you're distributing. It's mm-hmm. not redistributing, like people are saying. It's distributing things you're doing. It is in a way redistributing. And that's something which is not positive, and it's not creating and adding to the society. It's taking. It's taking away from the others. So that's, I think, one choice we can make, how we want to live, how we see that we want to live.
Mm-hmm. Well, often the outcome of political elections has everything to do with the belief, and I use that word intentionally, that something is going to be different because someone told us, and yet that promise comes from an area of our existence that has transformed into something very different from what it pretends to be. You know, the meaning of government was to lead, at least in America it's that way, that's what we're told, that our government is our servants, and really it's the other way around. The people are the servant to the government. And so people find that to be very discouraging. In other words, there's a great mistrust, and rightfully so, in politicians, because they say things that sound good, but they don't mean that. And we're not using our discernment, or when we, even though we're discerning it, we have this flippant attitude about it that, well, all politicians lie. You know, what are you going to do about it? You can't change it. Or you can vote and get vote them out of office. But they can play games with the voting machines or the ballot boxes, which they do. So we have to create something drastically different from what we have now, don't we, in that sense, if we're going
to truly create something else. Yeah, everybody likes to mock politicians, but they like the comedians. They just take the states and talk about things, you know, about ourselves. And it only happens, they are only politicians because we allow there to be politicians. And whenever you give away something, there's someone who actually wants to take it. And if you're giving away your power and your responsibility, there's always people who are glad to actually take the chance and opportunity and tell you what you're supposed to do. So whenever we decide not to do something, or we decide to be passive and be not in control, there are consequences. Once again, these responsibilities, and this is what happens. So there's no government, there's no others. These are words. Once again, with the strong emotional load in them and expectations, we putting a lot of hope on these changes and these words, and these politicians are reflecting it. And well, like I said, you know, they're not creating anything new. They're not creating anything in that sense positive into the society. It's individuals who are doing all those things. Politicians are living on your money. They are taking something away from you and giving it to someone else. That's how the game goes, and that's how it's always been, and it always will be,
mm-hmm.
as long as we allow it to happen. So it's like the problem is that it's like if you don't like some bank, you know, a big bank, and you just take your money away if you can, and put it somewhere else. With our political system, it's a bit more difficult because there's also the force behind them. We're giving the military forces and coercion behind this system. So it's not that easy just to take your money away or take your power away and say that I'm not complying anymore. But we always have a choice and chance to make a difference and be more aware what we're doing. And when enough people are waking up, these 100 monkeys, once again, they are waking mm-hmm. up all, and when they're waking up and they say no more,
mm-hmm.
Or just walk away and start to do things differently, then things are changing. Then they can change rapidly.
Yeah.
And the positive thing, if you look into the history, is that government and these external wishes and hopes we be putting on these institutions, it's rather new creature. It's been only a few hundred years old in the sense we mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And there hasn't been central banks, you know, it must be only a few hundred years we having those, the central governments been in the meaning we having now only a few hundred years. And before, people were living happily without these institutions. And as a matter of fact, if you're living your ordinary life, many times you have nothing to do with these institutions, and you forget that they exist. We just walk into a shop and we voluntarily exchanging society. Society is people, and the rest is only constructions and concepts we've been building, and these are words. Mainly they are words. It sounds funny, but they are words. Government, society, money, they are words, they are contracts, they are common beliefs and concepts. We're getting so used to use these terms and think that they are things and they are indestructible, but they are only ideas. When we change the ideas and see things differently, we can just change their meaning.
Mm-hmm.
There's no central bank, or there's no government, there's no military. If you know, people choose not to do something, you know, everybody chooses to do something else tomorrow.
Well, yeah, and what you just described is all leading us to a point where we have to determine how great our conviction is. In other words, we will have to face fear. You talked about the government saying, well, you do this or else. They come after you with the police or the military or the jail, the jailer and the key. And they sell us this concept of we all have an equal share in everything, and they call it democracy, yet we don't have the equal share. But we don't really recognize that, do we? We listen to the promise, and we ignore the reality of the situation. And imagine if we all said, okay, from this point right now, as James from Wingmaker says, I'm a sovereign integral. I am separate. I'm created as an individual expression of the whole. And that's as far as I go as far as social equality. We would change things overnight, wouldn't we?
Yes, and I think the crisis we're having, if you want to call it crisis, I think the better word would be opportunity or challenge we're facing is that we have different rules. We're having two different separate rules in every society, no matter where you're going. There's a certain type of way of behavior which is morally accepted and it applies to individuals. But then we have a completely different and contradictory rules which apply to the same individuals but with some nice fancy title. So when you a social worker, when you government worker, you have a uniform and you're called police, you have another uniform you're called military, or you are a charge, or you something like this, fancy hats and wardrobe, then these first rules do not apply to you, and you are irresponsible. You are not responsible of your actions individually.
Yes.
And this creates the destruction and chaos in our society and the polarity of things. And as long as we see, we don't recognize things as they are, like in the war, for example, there are people killing other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we do not condemn that, no matter who kills on what purpose, but, you know, killing is killing. And we have separate rules, you know, things will not change. So we have to open our eyes and start to see that, you know, we are human beings, all of us. And in order to live peacefully and in harmony, we have to also act in the same manner. So it's not okay to kill people if you're called a soldier. It's not okay to actually abuse people if you called police or you called a government worker or some other title. So having a middleman, having a third party, which is once again imaginary, you know, it's just once again always people are only doing all these things. We are doing these things, but when we attach or deattach ourselves from our individual ethics and responsibility and act upon sort of in another role and are not responsible of our actions anymore. This is what creates all the funny things in our worlds. So coming back to politics, for example, taxation is a theft. You're taking something by force and you're not giving anything back. So if you're pickpocketing, you are a thief and you're going to jail. But if you take 800 billion, for example, from each and every pocket in the country and give it to some other people, this is okay.
Yeah.
And separate rules are applying. So as long as there are these things that you're using force against other people, we're seeing things what are happening in the world and things are not changing. So when we are not taking responsibility in our own actions and start to be responsible for our own lives, then things will go on and nothing will change.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's this is a crazy way of looking at what you just said. Imagine the guy that's standing before the judge awaiting sentencing. He's been found guilty by the jury of being a pickpocket, stealing $4 out of the wallet of somebody walking down the street. And the judge says, do you have anything to say for yourself? And he says, yes, judge, I was just exercising my own bailout.
No.
At least it drives a point home. Now, he might get an extra year for saying that.
Obstruction of justice.
Yeah. and then you have them stealing trillions. So, you know, like you said, that dichotomy is there. Maybe he should wear the black robe when he goes before the judge. Or maybe he should wear the policeman's hat. Or go in there. Now, I may be a bit ridiculous in saying that, but you see, they don't like it when you mirror what they're doing. They don't like to see themselves in the true light.
And that's what I mean by that. There's a two set of rules. And as long as there are two set of rules for same people, you know, things are not going to change. So it's an ethical and moral problem we're we'll facing.
Yeah. Well, then within what you said, there's two sets of rules. There's one for them and one for us.
Well, actually, there's one for us. There's no them because we are the society. So
yeah.
Once again, you know, government, all these things, it's nice to label things, and it's nice to say that, it's president has to do that, it's the politicians who has to do this, it's those people, but it's us. There's nothing but us here, the people. And we have having different hats. So mm-hmm. We are actually, in a way, we are psychotic, schizophrenic. We're having two separate, you know, mindsets of working in the same society.
Mm-hmm.
So one time we just, you know, kind of loving and another moment we just stealing and doing crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder, you know, kids are looking at us and, you know, wondering what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
Oops, sorry, dirty word.
Yes. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you. This was very interesting. I want to recommend your book again, Fragments of Reality. And would you like to give out your web address or any important information that you want to share with the listening audience before saying goodnight? And you're going to be back again with us later on this month, actually on the 25th of February.
Yep.
So,
okay.
You can save it till then, or no? <I'm kidding.
laughs> Well, I can maybe just mention that my Fragments of Reality, the book, has also a website, and it's fragmentsofreality.com. You can actually read the book free of charge from there, or you can buy it from Amazon and different places. And there's also my own personal website, and it is just my name, first name. Lastname.com. So either way, you can find a bit more information if you like.
Yes. Now we have two spellings for your last name. One is with a C on the book, and the one on the website is with a K. I don't know if the C works for your website, so I'm presuming it's the one with the K.
All of them are working. I wrote the book in with my. Well, I put a bit different name for it. It's not much, but, you know, just more international way of the Finnish pronunciation or my word name. So it's a pen name. So Peter, P-E-T-E-R, is the name in the book. And Kajander, C-A-J-A-N-D-E-R, is my pen name, Peter Kajander. And that works. And also my real name, PetriKajander.com, works as well. So both of them are working. Going to the same place.
Okay, yeah, and I highly recommend this book for anybody that's looking for some comfort and some solace and some inspiration and some peace and love. We didn't talk about love. Maybe the next time you're on the show, we can talk about that.
Okay.
We did talk about love a little bit when I talked about doing what you love. But I think it would be a nice place to go, nice place to visit. And maybe we'll even be able to take some calls from the listening audience. They have a tendency to want to listen to us when we talk about these eye-opening and heart-opening topics. I can tell you that. It's not that they're not interested in the show. So this is not so controversial, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it causes people to go inside and get quiet. So we did our job, I guess, in that respect.
Happy to hear that.
So again, the book is Fragments of Reality, Daily Entries of Lived Life. And I want to thank you, Peter, for being on the show. I look forward to your next appearance on the 25th. Hopefully you and I will have a chance to chat in the meantime. And if I get any email from the listening audience, I will forward that to you. Is there an email address that you want to give out to anybody that might want to write to you or ask you a question?
Sure. Well, I think the easiest email address is that it's called info@fragmentsofreality.com. So it's my book's website's email address, info@fragmentsofreality.com. That works, and there's also contact forms in part of my website. So those two are working, and happy to hear your thoughts.
Okay, thanks for being on the show. I'm going to say goodnight to you. Speak with Michael in the next few days. Tell him I said hello, and I wish you the best. I want to help you get the message of your book out. That's very important. It's very empowering. I enjoyed reading it, and I'm going to keep reading it because there's a lot of very valuable, worthwhile information there. And it's definitely a cure for the monkey mind.
Well, thank you, Don. It's been a pleasure. It's always so nice to talk with you, and it seems that we always have something to say, you know, whether it makes sense or not, but at least we're enjoying ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I think it made sense tonight. We didn't crack as many jokes as I thought we would, but I'm sure the next time we will.
So, yeah, we have to try harder.
I have to watch more comedy. I've been doing too much research lately, dealing with too many serious issues. And got to see the humor in those things, too. Okay.
Yeah,
well, you take care. Thank you very much for being on the show. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Petri Kayander, or Peter Kayander, and he'll be with us on the 25th of February. In the meantime, special thanks to Doug and Don Newsom, not necessarily in that order, for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light. See you tomorrow night, and have a good night.